You're listening to the Art of Dying Well podcast, making death and dying something we can all talk about.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special Art of Dying Well podcast with me, James Abbott. End-of-life care is our topic for this episode, and we're going to take a close look in particular at the hospice movement. I was lucky enough to visit St Joseph's Hospice in Hackney in East London, and they rather generously opened their doors to me, and I was able to speak to a range of people, staff and patients alike, about this really special place where care for the dying is as much a calling for those who work there as it is a job. Now, St Joseph's for me felt very much like a place of care and consolation. That bit wasn't really a great surprise, but I did encounter a huge amount of laughter actually in life and general positivity that perhaps I wasn't expecting so much. But it's clear to me that that really is the product of this wonderful caring environment. Now, I'm sure that after I've shared this episode with you, you'll realise just how moving an experience it was for me making this. And I do hope that you'll agree that our hospices really are the jewel in the crown when it comes to quality end-of-life care. So, let's start with the nuts and bolts. Jane Naismith is joint CEO of St Joseph's. I asked the rather simple question, what is a hospice and what does it do?
I think people often think of a hospice as just a building, and a hospice is far more than just a building. A hospice is more a philosophy of care, and it's more about meeting people wherever they need hospice care. So that could be our community nurses going into their own home, it could be in our day hospice, it could be in our inpatient unit, it could be somebody having a complementary therapy or a counselling session. So it is much more than just its entire physical building, its physical form. And it's all about supporting people with life-limiting illnesses who aren't necessarily imminently dying. And a lot of people expect hospice care just to be about dying. And in fact, I would probably argue it's absolutely opposite. It's about living until you die. But it's about supporting people to live really well until they die. And that often means that people will touch a hospice at several points because it's a continuum. So they might meet one of our community nurses or come to day hospice for a short period, and then symptoms might be improved and they might be discharged, and then their symptoms might come back or change, might be seen again, may come into our inpatient unit for a short period of time, may come home, and so on and so forth. So it's not just one building, it's a philosophy.
And so when, you know, one might have that misconception that, oh, if I'm going to a hospice, I'm going to die. That's not always the case, is it?
I would probably say it's very rarely the case, unless it's really your preference to be cared for at the end of your life in a hospice. And when I say that, I mean the last few days, maybe weeks. So hospices used to be places where people would kind of be tucked up in bed for 6 months or 3 months. Now, very much our inpatient unit, the average length of stay is about 15 days. And very much more around supporting people to feel better, to maximise the time they have, and then to go and be with who they wish to be with, which generally isn't a group of nurses in an inpatient unit.
Do you think some, most, you can tell me, people nearing the end of their life actually want to know what's going to happen to them?
I think if I look at my clinical practice, because I'm a specialist palliative care nurse and I've been doing it for the last 20 odd years, I think about 50-50. A lot of people really want detailed information and feel very cheated that you can't kind of give them very detailed information like, you know, on Tuesday afternoon, this is going to happen. And then other people are very much, I don't really want to know, and what happens will happen to me, and please don't tell me because it's scary. So often families want to know though, because families find the thought of someone dying or getting less well, one, it's incredibly emotionally difficult, but it's also really scary, and they're frightened of doing the wrong thing. So families often want to know. I suppose my experience tells me that people die as they live. So if you're the sort of person who wants to know lots, then you're likely to want to know lots when you've got a life-limiting illness. And you're likely to want to ask questions and find out more and try and make sense of it. Whereas if you're the sort of person who's a bit more laissez-faire and just tell me what I need to know and don't ask me to make too many decisions, then that tends to be how you are. It really is about personality type.
St. Joseph's was founded by Catholic religious sisters, the Sisters of Charity, who came over from Ireland in 1900 to care for the poor and the dying of East London, and then 5 years later opened this wonderful hospice. Cardinal Vincent Nicholls is the patron of St. Joseph's. He recently opened the newly refurbished St. Michael's ward and can't speak highly enough about the hospice movement.
There's a cousin of mine who started a number of hospices in Peru and in other parts of the world, Pakistan. And he always said that dying was the most important thing every human being does. So knowing how to end this life and enter the next life. And that's the work of a hospice. When personal and family care reaches its limit, either for respite care or renewal care, or for end-of-life care, hospices make such a difference to the way in which a person can die with dignity. To die with dignity means to die surrounded by those who love you and who care for you, and in that sense, accompany you to this last great act of handing our life back to God when he calls. So the hospice movement is situated at one of the most crucial moments in a person's life. And I am grateful for the way that it's been developed in partnership with the NHS and is providing in so many places care for people at their end of life and at the beginning of their eternal life. And St. Joseph's Hospice here in Hackney has some very special qualities. I think the most important thing about it is that it's deeply rooted in this local community. And you know, people in the East End of London have a strong sense of place, a strong sense of identity. And St. Joseph's Hospice is rooted and serving that sense of who the people are from around here. You see, the walls behind me are bare, but the pictures are going to come in. But they're going to be class photographs of the Hackney area. So even in the decoration of these wards, its roots in this area will be demonstrated and strengthened. And that is a great characteristic of St. Joseph's. It belongs here, it has grown up from here, and it is serving the people in this part of London. And God bless St. Joseph's Hospice.
So let's get into the care. What does good end-of-life care, and specifically palliative care, look like? Debbie Pegram is the matron at St. Joseph's and has decades of experience at the bedside.
So I think good palliative care is ensuring that patients get, and their families, get the best quality of care at the end of their lives, which includes making sure that they have time. We're very privileged here to have a good staffing ratio. So it's really important that patients and their families have care in respect of looking at all their needs, not just their physical needs, but their social needs, their psychological needs, their spiritual needs, which are really important for someone at the end of their life. Even if they have no religion, everybody has spiritual needs. So it's what's most important to that person at the end of their life. And I would say that they're the key things.
Joe, I'm always amazed by coming to this particular hospice, actually, in that it has so much life about it. It's almost not what you'd expect in a certain sense. Why do you think there is this sort of, is it the commitment to care? Is it the way you treat the families and the patients? What do you think has this slightly uplifting nature about this hospice?
Well, I think, you know, it's a really nice environment. It's very light, it's very welcoming. So I think your initial, when you walk into the place, it feels comfortable. Our teamwork is amazing. I think the welcome is always really positive. So I think your initial feeling when you come to the place is it of it being very welcoming and inclusive for all.
And what are those big challenges? Because I'd imagine people can come in, especially if they haven't initially been familiar with the hospice, and be quite distressed or quite anxious about what is to come. What are the challenges for you?
Yeah, so I think that is a real concern for people. It's fear of the unknown. So if people haven't been to a hospice and don't understand what we're about, then that initial arriving here is very, very anxiety provoking for a lot of people. I mean, we've had student nurses come and, you know, they walk in and they're like rabbits in headlights because they don't know what to expect. But I think because of that welcome and the feeling you get when you walk in, of it feeling comfortable, feeling settled, then you soon get used to what the environment is going to be like and what people are going to be like. So I think the, you know, that challenge of getting people here in the first place is sometimes a big challenge because they don't understand what it is. And also stigma. There's a big stigma about death and dying still. People don't understand and don't plan. And I think also St. Joseph's has a history and people, you know, don't quite get what the hospice offers and what it's about. So actually that challenge of getting people here in the first place, once they're here, often they don't want to leave. So that, you know, is tricky because we have people for short stays. This isn't a long-term care facility. It's for short-term care.
Debbie is also keen to dispel myths and stereotypes about the hospice and stresses that it is very much a place of peace and consolation.
The space here allows patients, families and staff to have some time just for themselves. The gardens are wonderful. You wouldn't believe it, being in the East End of London on Mare Street, which is really busy, that there's this space where it's peaceful. I was out there the other day and there's a blackbird singing and I thought, oh, if we bring one of the patients out, which we did in the afternoon. And then the chapel, you know, even if your faith isn't Catholic or, you know, have that space, the chapel, where you can spend time with yourself, with your feelings, your thoughts, your spirituality, whatever that might be. We're very, very lucky here to have all that time and space.
And stick with that life-giving theme. This does come across as a place of learning. People seem to stay in their jobs here, their calling, whatever you want to call it. they seem to stay a long time. And there does seem to be a genuine, I want to be here, about the staff as well. Does that come through?
Absolutely. We have staff here that have been through here the whole of their career because they know the ethos of what we do. So it's one of, you know, being together, being cared for, having the highest quality of care and those people around you.
Do you know, my brother actually died in a hospital, mid-20s, right, in a palliative situation. And I remember thinking, you know, everyone's like, oh, I don't want to die in a hospital. Mm. I'm sure some think I don't want to die in a hospice. Mm. But it was a situation where actually the people around him were the thing that made it most bearable, actually. It wasn't whether it was a sterile environment, whether it was too clinical. I think if the people have that human heart and carry it forward to the relatives, carry it forward in all they do, it makes a huge difference, doesn't it?
Huge.
Is that what you get here?
Absolutely. And it's often the smallest things that have the biggest impact. You know, if you're in a busy ward, you haven't got time to find out how someone likes their cup of tea, whether they like it with milk or strong or, you know, here, those things are really important. I know that sounds, you know, like a cup of tea, but actually for someone who can't do very much and maybe just drink tea is, you know, so it's really important. And those little things have the biggest impact on patients and their families. There's no doubt about that. The moments of kindness, the tenderness, the, you know, and I can't put that any stronger, really, that due to the time, you know, when we interview, we make sure that people are fit for, obviously, for the job, but also we look at our whole sort of ethos and our teams and think about who may fit on any particular service or ward. But actually we're very privileged here because I think the people that come for the jobs here are the people that really want to be here and really want to work with people at the end of their life. And we have students here as well who come and often want to, you know, they'll say at the end of their sort of placement here from City University, have you got any jobs? Can we stay? I mean, that's really great, isn't it? You know, that we're able to have younger nurses or nurses in there, not always younger, can't be ageist, but, you know, nurses that are in there early in their career, they want to be here. I wouldn't always encourage a nurse to come here straight from qualifying because I think it's good to see a little bit of the outside world first. But actually, you know, those we have people that go off and actually a year later say, I've done it now, I'm going to come back, this is where I want to be, you know, so.
In a nutshell, what would you say to someone that had a particular stereotype, perhaps, a negative one, something very, very sad and bleak about the hospice movement, hospices in general? Working here and having worked here for some time and having spoken so eloquently, what would you say to a person that was sort of, oh, I don't want to go there? What would you say?
Well, I'll first of all say come and meet us, because I think if we get people through the door and they come and see us and talk to us. But I would definitely say, you know, I've been a nurse for 42 years doing lots of different jobs. This is the best job that I've ever done, and that's genuine, because I have the time, I have the teams around me, the support, and it's just a great place to be for patients, families and the staff. There's absolutely no doubt about that.
Well, I do hope by now, like me, you've come to realise that some of the stereotypes just aren't really an accurate reflection of a hospice, and certainly not this one, St Joseph's. The best way to demonstrate this is to open the doors of day hospice, a place where those who have had a terminal diagnosis but aren't necessarily at the very end can come for companionship and for all manner of activities and therapies. Here's day hospice manager and registered nurse Zainab Ali to tell us more.
I don't think there's anything out in the community like this, which is a social group for patients who are palliative care patients who have got a prognosis of less than 12 months. You know, we take patients who have got cancer diagnosis, patients who've got lung conditions, breathlessness, heart failure, renal failure, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, you know, mild dementia. And for us, it's a gentle introduction to the hospice, because I think there's a taboo about, you know, hospices being a place where patients are really unwell. Once they come in here, they don't leave. But we've come a long, long way from this. You know, patients come in. We offer 12 sessions here in day hospice. So we have patients that come in once a week on a Tuesday, Wednesday or a Thursday for 12 sessions. And it's an opportunity for them to come in, engage with other patients, which could be like arts and crafts, access the services that we provide here, complementary therapy, access some physiotherapy, see social workers, have some benefits checked out. So it's a lot of things for them to do, all catered within the one day that they're here. And the fantastic thing about it is that we offer transport as well. So we've got two drivers that go out and pick patients up in the morning, and then they get dropped off. So they spend the day with us. So they arrive here from around 10:30 and stay till 3 o'clock, and lunch is provided as well, with endless teas and coffees and biscuits.
Sounds ideal. Where can we sign up? And, you know, without going down the route of miracle cures and other things, I think it's probably fair to say, however, that this improves people's outlook, doesn't it? I've seen a lot of people here that have actually really warmed to it and look like they're getting lots out of it. And it's got to make for a better life, hasn't it?
Yeah. I think, you know, the difficulty and challenging things are when they've seen an oncologist, and they're informed that, you know, unfortunately the illness is palliative, there isn't anything that can be done now. You know, a lot of patients hear that and get deflated. You know, it's like clock watching, trying to figure out, you know, how long a person has, which nobody knows, in fact, you know. And by them coming over here, engaging with other patients who are in similar conditions to them and giving them that quality of life, you know, however long they've got. You know, we have laughters here. You know, we're aware that, you know, patients can come in feeling quite sad, you know, with other things going on in the background. A lot of patients don't have family members. They live alone. You know, they don't see anybody. They don't talk to anybody. An opportunity for them to come in here, socialise with other patients. A lot of the times patients come in quite sad. You know, they're in a lot of pain, anxiety, not knowing what's going to happen. And then they come in and spend a couple of hours in here with us. We're like a little family. And then they go home with a smile, a big smile on their face. And that kind of gives me a pride that, you know what, it's a job well done.
And we don't need to go down the route of how long you've been working here. I know it's a while. And I've spoken to a lot of people that have been working here a long while. And what that can only tell me is that this is almost more than a job, actually. Do you get that feeling? Does it feel like more than a job?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned family before. We are like a one big family. You know, patients over here are like friends outside of the day hospice as well. So sometimes they'll exchange numbers. You know, patients who are a bit more well enough might actually meet up for teas and coffees outside. Our team is great up here. We get on really well. The patients enjoy our company. We love our patients. So it's great. We've had patients that are really afraid of the word hospice. And I always tend to say to them that, you know what, give yourself a few sessions at least. Sometimes, you know, one session is not enough because obviously you're new. The majority of the patients know each other, so they've built that relationship. It takes a while to build a relationship. So give it at least 2 to 3 sessions and then see if it's not for you, then that's fine. The key here is that nobody's forced to do anything that they don't want to do. We've had patients that come in here, they just sit up here looking out of the window, reading a newspaper, having endless cups of tea, and that's absolutely fine. Other patients want to engage in other services that we provide, talking to other patients, you know, having complementary therapy, doing a bit of physio, and that's absolutely fine as well. But one thing for sure, when they come in for 12 sessions, they never want to leave.
I'm sure they want to double that up, though.
They do. They get really sad and upset because there isn't anything out there that kind of meets the services that we provide. You know, majority of the social groups that are out in the community, you've got to make your own way. And a lot of our patients are unable to do that because they're housebound. So, they can't wait to come back.
For those that might be a bit reticent, for those reasons you mentioned, the stereotypes, the feelings about what a hospice is and what it stands for, what would you say to those men and women that might be thinking, oh, that sounds great, I'd love to, but I'm still a bit reticent?
So I always say to patients, you know, I'd love to offer trial runs, so trial day. Come in for the day, even if it's for an hour, half an hour, come and sit down, have a chat with us. When you put a name to a face, you know, you see where you're going to be at. We invite family members to come as well with patients on their first visit. So the patients feel comforted and secure, and the family members think, you know what, my loved one's going to be cared for. This is the environment they're going to be in. This is the name. This is the person that we spoke to. This is the person that's going to be caring for my loved one, which kind of shows reassurance. So I think for me, yeah, spending half an hour to a full day with us, asking questions, any doubts that you may have, just asking us, you know, and we can hopefully reassure them and comfort them and say, it's not as bad as what it sounds like. And you haven't heard our karaoke yet, because once the mic comes out and I start singing...
You join in?
I'm the leader, unfortunately. They say I can't sing, but if it puts a smile on someone's face, you know, a patient's face, I'm happy with that.
Right. We've arrived at my favourite part of the podcast. We're about to hear from three wonderful ladies who we met in day hospice when we visited, and let me tell you, they kept me on my toes.
So who have we got? We've got Anna.
Anna.
And we've
and
got
Patricia.
Patricia. Yep. And Joanne.
That's it.
Perfect. So Anna, tell me about day hospice. What do you get out of being here?
A lot of peace, happiness, chatting, lovely food, prezzies.
Sounds great.
And massage, reflexology.
And have you found it helps you?
A great deal, yeah. Because I've got neuroendocrine cancer, which got carcinoid syndrome, and it's 1 in every 100,000. So I got the lottery backwards.
Oh, bless you.
But yeah, coming here is great.
And how much of it is a sense of being around other people, a sense of community? Do you get that here?
Oh yeah, definitely. And it's everybody's got a great sense of humour, so that keeps your spirits up.
Wonderful. And what sort of, have you had a massage? You had anything today?
I'm going to have my hands done in a little while.
Oh, very nice.
Richie done them 2 weeks ago, and they were locked. So now...
Wow, wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, Patricia, I can see you're very busy. tell me what you're doing over there.
Being engaged with paint, that's about all.
Being engaged?
Being engaged with paint.
I can't see the stencil, but I can see it's very green. What exactly is that?
Trying to paint a tree.
Ah.
You have to look at him and talk for a minute.
Trying to paint a tree.
Now, you know you can carry on if you want?
Yes,
no,
I will.
No problem at all. Patricia, you tell me what you get out of being here. What do you like about being here?
Being in company with other folks in my same age group, thinking alike, if our memory can be sharp enough to think.
Seems pretty sharp to me. And have you had any of these services, any massages?
Not as yet, it's my third week.
Oh, right.
And so far I'm just enlightening my time with painting and my memory as well, engaging my memory with painting.
I tell you what I do like. I like the way there's a lot of laughter around here. Yeah. You all seem to be having a bit of a giggle.
Oh, definitely. Especially with Joanne around.
Well, you know what? We're about to come to Joanne.
And the staff. The staff keeps us all busy laughing.
Yeah, they seem great to me, I have to say. Now, we talked about massages. What's going on over here then, Joanne?
Well, I'm having a hand massage.
That looks great.
It feels great and all. Want one?
I do. Don't think I'm sitting here not being all jealous with you getting that hand massage. I'd love one. Yeah, how does that feel?
Lovely. It is very relaxing, very relaxing.
I'm going to ask you that same question. What do you get out of being here then at Day Hospice?
Well, you have to go out to get here, which is a good thing for me because I live on my own. And once you're here, you're just part of the friendship. It's one big friendship.
Yeah.
You know, even with new people that come, we make them welcome. Like they made me welcome when I first came here. And because a lot of people might have personal worries, you know, and you tend to forget it. As soon as you come here, you just forget it. For the time you're here, you're made welcome, and it's a good thing. You see their faces change.
Yeah.
It's nice.
And some people sort of, they have their misconceptions about hospices, thinking it's all negative and sad, but I haven't seen much sadness around here. I've seen quite a lot of joy, actually. Would you agree with that?
Well, I suppose hospices really is mostly like they think of the dead people. But that don't come into our daily life.
No, absolutely.
Can do if you want it to, but we all just talk natural.
But like you said, it seems to be an opportunity to almost step away from some of those big worries in life and just have some time together. Would you say that as well, Anne?
Oh, yeah. And not only that, the staff helps us out with any little problems we have, filling in forms. Mm. I got registered today to vote.
I'm not going to ask you who you're voting for.
No, but she done it on the phone for me so I can vote over the phone eventually.
Brilliant.
And, yeah, it's a great... You don't think about your illness.
Mm.
You don't think it's end-of-life care, palliative care.
Yeah.
And... As I said, it's all the fun and laughter that and meeting new people. We don't seem to talk about our illness, do we? We're having conversations about different things, but putting that away.
So like Joanne, it's that chance of just putting that to one side for a while and just
yeah, and enjoy
being
the
around
company
one another.
And enjoy
yeah.
what we're doing and the fun and laughter, because they are funny stuff, really, aren't they?
They've been making us laugh all day, actually. Would you agree with that, Patricia? Is it like a big family with the staff and everything?
Of course, a big family. We need more of this in the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And so how long have you been coming here, Joanne?
Well, I'm not sure. I think I'm coming up to my 12 weeks. Like, and then you have to have a break for 3 months and then you can reapply maybe to come back again, which obviously I would certainly do. But I've seen a lot of people since I've been here come and go because the people that have been here for 12 weeks, their time's up, they go, and new people come in. That's how they function here. By having new people coming in, then you go and then more new people come in. And it's like a round and round and round. It's just... To me, it works perfectly, and I think a lot of that is to do with the staff because they know what they're doing. Very difficult job sometimes because they've got to get it right. They get it wrong.
No, you're right. But, I mean, what I've seen, I've only been here for a few hours,
yeah.
but from the front desk all the way through, the drivers, the volunteers,
yeah.
everyone's very happy and keen to play their part, aren't they?
They're good, our boys, the Pat and Ray. They're the drivers up here. They're good.
I noticed they disappeared. I know they disappeared when the camera went on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hiding around the corner.
Yeah. You have some music, you'll soon see Ray.
Are we going to get the music? We'll have to get the music on. Right, I'm going to come back across to you, Anne. So, how long have you been coming here?
I think this is my fourth week.
Right. And you get 12?
12. Yeah, so I've got a lot ahead of me.
Now, we talked about massages and things, which is nice.
Well, but I do reflexology, which I've had. And the hand massage, head massage. So it's not only that, you have quizzes and different things. Last week we had our quizzes, wasn't it? That was
fun. How did
fun.
You get on?
I didn't, I left. No, I had to leave early. But the staff was very good, Gracie and Jackie, everybody. And they come around, keep asking, do you want a cup of tea, cup of coffee, cold
Sounds great.
Drinks, even to alcohol.
I think I might stick around. Sounds great. Tell me a little bit about how you felt before the start of the 12 weeks and how you feel now. Is this what you expected? Do you expect this sort of thing?
No, no.
What did you expect?
I don't know. I thought I was just going to be sort of interviewed by doctors to see, because I was in a bad place, change of medication, crying all the time and really sad and everything. My great-grandchildren keeps me going and grandchildren. So since I've come here and the change of medication again, I've booked up and me happy self again.
Yeah?
Yeah, and looking forward to Tuesdays that I come here.
That's great to see.
Yeah.
And Patricia?
Yes, sir.
Do you have far to go to get here? Is it easy to get here?
Easy to get here, but mainly because I don't travel by public transport. I'm being picked up by the transport that's provided for me.
Yeah, very good.
And this is very helpful. It helps me to get out of the house as well.
I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Anne. So you said you've been here 3 weeks. What were your expectations? Are they different from what you've actually realised happens here?
Not really, because I used to come here downstairs in the projects that were running. And so I had an idea, but when I came up here, it encouraged me and it reminded me of what I used to see when I used to come around here some years ago. And reminded me is what I really expect to be in a community for the citizens, especially elderly. Because I worked with the Jewish Welfare Board for 3 years, I think, and in Stanford Hill. That place is broken down now. It was mainly for the Jewish community. And I always considered that, it would be nice to have this type of community atmosphere for the general communities, for the citizens of the community. Years ago, you retire and you're just in your homes, looking through the windows and seeing people pass and that's all, but not to be engaged in doing anything coming out of the home or so, which from your family. It's very encouraging for us such to be for in the communities, for people in general.
No, and I think you make a good point there. We could do with more, really.
Of course, can really do with more of this in the communities.
Joanne, one thing that it does strike me here is that everyone's respected, everyone's dignity is respected. It's a proper caring environment. What do you like most about the care here?
Well, it applies to everybody.
Mm.
But you don't ask for it. But they automatically give it. And that's the nicest thing. Bit like a family, you don't ask your family for care. They give it to you. And it's the same here. Anybody, you know, that comes here gets the same care as anything. And it's really, really good care.
Yeah,
they get treated so well. And if they have got a problem, then like Jackie and Grace will try and find somebody to sort that problem out for them, whether it be money or whatever. It can be sorted and it can put their minds at ease. Where if they didn't come to somewhere like this, they'd be worrying about it. But, or they'd be laughing like this one next to me now.
Right, I'm going to ask you all the same final question. Don't worry, it's nearly over. You can relax. The final question is, if let's say someone was living on their own, like you say, obviously similar to your circumstance, but they hadn't quite got the confidence to come here, what would you say to a person in a similar position?
Take the bull by the horns and go and get it.
Tell you what.
And well, I second that.
Well said. Patricia, what would you say?
And I live on my own.
Yeah.
And I think Patricia does, she can speak for herself, go on.
What would you say to someone that was just a bit unsure or, you know, how would you say day hospice would help them if they were to come along?
Once you've reached a certain age and you don't have family, grandchildren and such, you have to find a place like here, like St. Joseph Hospice, and try and help it to keep on so that other people will have the same experience that those who attend here gained. Keep your brains active and well engaged into different aspects of life. You will be able to forget about all the aches and pains and lonesomeness.
Well, I'm just going to say thank you. I'm going to say thank you to Joanne. Thank you to Anna. And thank you very much, Patricia. It seems like a really nice place to be. And if those gin and tonics are going, I'll have one of those now, if possible.
You can ask on the way out.
She drank them all.
What a treat for me to speak to those wonderful, spirited ladies. No doubt they've had their ups and downs, but it was so heartening to see the companionship, the care, the camaraderie in day hospice, not to mention the wonderful, caring staff who I'm sure you heard were credited several times by Anna, by Patricia and by Joanne there for their wonderful care. But before I sign off, let's just return to Jane Naismith, the joint CEO, to answer a question that I wanted to ask about how hospices compare to hospitals and what the future holds for St. Joseph's.
So I suppose, first of all, we're a hospice in a community and we are part of our community. And our hub's a really good example of that. You could pop in and have a cup of coffee. You know, that's really important to us because if somebody pops in to have a cup of coffee, then they realise that hospices aren't scary places. You get to know people, it's quite an intimate thing, a hugely privileged intimate thing, caring for somebody at the end of their life. So you get to know them and their families, and therefore families do tend to come back. And sometimes we signpost them to other services, but generally services that we can provide and support them to kind of move on from our support to, because there's nothing worse, you're right, hospital is linear. I've seen so many people leave hospital with a little property bag of their loved one's belongings and nothing else. And that's not how it should be. It should be more of a continuation process, which naturally tapers off, or they come back as volunteers.
I love what you say about community there. What would you say the future is for the hospice movement, the future of this particular hospice? Is it going in the right direction? Is it a place that you're content with, or can there always be more that can be done?
You can never be content. There's always more. I think here we have to be mindful that our population is changing. The population of our core boroughs are changing. They're becoming younger. And therefore that probably certainly will mean we'll be offering far more services to the community. Maybe more drop-in services rather than fixed appointment-y services, if that makes sense. How you flex to do that's a challenge. I believe probably if I came back here in 30 years, there might be less beds, but our community team would probably be three times the size, and so would all our other support services, our day hospice, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because I think less people will come in and more, or people will still want to be in a hospice and still want to be in a hospice bed, but for shorter periods of time.
Now, am I going to be too idealistic here? But it sounds to me that there needs to be a sort of shared humanity then, really. You know, it literally extending the community. Yes, this is bricks and mortar with some wonderful people and services within it. But is part of a better future all of us realising we all have a particular part to play?
So absolutely, and that's our Compassionate Neighbours scheme is a prime example of that. And I very much see that as maybe being a social movement in time where it's about being prepared to support each other. But I do think you probably need to have a bit of training to do that. So our Compassionate Neighbours are volunteers who do a four-day training programme, and then they're matched with someone who maybe has a life-limiting illness, who's quite isolated. And rather than me coming and saying, well, can I do your garden today, or what can I do for you? Because nobody likes to be done for. It's very much, what can we do together? Because most things you do, you get something back from. That's why we're successful as volunteers. You get something out of volunteering. So it's, what can we do together? What's our shared commonality? And I do think it is about being human and about humanity. And you're right, that's not idealistic. How we achieve it is hard.
Very, very much so. So the final question. If you had somebody in front of you that was sceptical about the hospice movement, about what happens here at St Joseph's, in a nutshell, what would you say to them to encourage them to open their eyes to what happens here?
Trust us and come have a chat. And I think that would be it. Trust us and step in the door and just come for a chat.
So the proof's in the pudding. Come and see.
Come and see. You don't need to come as a patient. Just come and say, can I have a look round? Can I meet someone?
Well, there you are. An open invitation from Jane to visit St Joseph's Hospice in Hackney, East London. Do it. You won't regret it. That's about it from me. Thank you very much for listening to our podcast. Now, you know, I can't help but marvel at this excellent hospice where such care is taken to look after people at the end of their lives. For those who work here, it really does seem to be more than just a job. They really do care in all senses of the word. Understandably, most people want their death or that of a loved one or friend to be comfortable and reconciled, a dignified death. Here at St Joseph's Hospice, the dying person always comes first. And for that, I, for one, am extremely grateful. Bye for now.